It's Helping Hand, weekly feature, HPR1 stations, and online at hawaiipublicradio.org. Every Friday afternoon, Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to the disabled and others among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence. Thank you very much for listening. This week, we are learning about Parkinson's disease and the many resources available for patients, loved ones, and healthcare professionals. And we're doing it via the Hawaii Parkinson Association. There are a lot of ways to offer them support. And those include participating or volunteering with their walk that's coming up on November 4th, Magic Island, Ala Moana Beach Park in Honolulu. We're going to hear about that event. Also, we have a new guest and a returning guest who join us today. We have President Emeritus Kevin Lockett, who has been with us a number of times, and now the new president of the Hawaii Parkinson Association, Jerry Boster. We offer a big aloha and mahalo to Kevin and Jerry. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks for having us here.
Yeah, thanks.
It's great to have you back. And let's start by talking about Parkinson's disease. It's a progressive neurodegenerative disease that I think in a lot of these things, if you don't have to deal with it firsthand, if some loved one in your family doesn't have it, you may not know some of the ins and outs. Explain when Parkinson's begins to affect people, some of the early symptoms or signs, and the progression.
Yeah, so Parkinson's disease, it's not uncommon at all. It's actually the second most common neurodegenerative disease to Alzheimer's. And so 50,000 people are newly diagnosed in the United States per year, and there's estimation of 8 to 10 million people worldwide and growing with Parkinson's. So it is not rare, unfortunately. How it impacts people, Parkinson's early symptoms are actually what they call non-motor symptoms. So a lot of people will be in an active disease state with Parkinson's and not aware that they have it. And some of the non-motor symptoms that people have are constipation, difficult sleep disorders, loss of taste and smell. And it's not until motor symptoms show up to where you may see tremor, they have difficulty with moving, that they actually seek medical help and maybe eventually get a diagnosis.
And so constipation's one of the first ones you mentioned. What are some of the other pre-tremor symptoms, is what you're saying, will start to show up quite early, and it's going to be a little while before the other symptoms? What are the most common, very earliest symptoms again?
Yeah, so constipation, sleep disorders, loss of taste and smell are the most common. And they're using that now to try to diagnose people earlier, now that they're aware of this non-motor phase.
And that will start showing up. The most common age for someone to start experiencing the pre-symptoms would be?
So Parkinson's is more common in people over 65. However, there is about 15 to 20% of folks who get what they call young onset Parkinson's, mm-hmm. where it could be onset in the 20s to 50s. They're both Parkinson's, but they're different processes or diseases.
And there is, when it comes to containing it and dealing with it, what's available in terms of resources and also the progression of the disease? Unfortunately, there's a downside to it in that there isn't really there's not a conclusive round of therapy or treatment or anything that can really stop this.
Yeah, so right now there are treatments for symptoms. So all the treatments we have are symptomatic, so they'll help you deal with the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. But there's not a treatment now that actually slows down or prevents the disease from happening. However, there is great research that shows that physical activity and exercise may, you know, in animal studies, slow down Parkinson's disease and in some cases prevent it. So there's a big push for physical activity programs, exercise programs for people with Parkinson's specifically based on those studies.
So exercise and movement, I mean, is that the basic? Those are the only things they know so far that may potentially slow it down, or theoretically could even, with enough of it or done in the right way, act to prevent it.
Correct. Physical activity is probably the best medicine for somebody with Parkinson's. Yeah.
It's probably why you stay in such good shape after all your exposure to it, huh? Because it's just like, that seems to be the only thing that can be done.
Yeah, it's high impact, and people do better. And one of the pushes with HPA, our association here, is to help people live well with Parkinson's. And so developing programs and having people have access to exercise programs with Parkinson's has been a big, very helpful, I think, for the community and help people live well.
And let's talk about that. There's support groups, there are classes. Talk about how those things, there's a, at your site at parkinsonshawaii.org, there's a calendar. It's under upcoming events. It's just jam-packed with classes, support groups. And if you can, give a little overview of these in terms of people who may have a loved one who's affected, or just to provide people who are suffering from who have Parkinson's themselves an idea of what is available.
Yeah, so actually on our website, and I would encourage people to get on there, you can actually sign up for an e-newsletter, which will comes out about every 2 weeks, and it'll let you know what's going on locally and nationally in regards to Parkinson's. We offer support groups throughout Oahu and the neighbor islands, which typically they're monthly support groups that are used for kind of sharing, bonding and helping people, but also education. We have a lot of different speakers to help, again, educate people to live well on Parkinson's. In addition to that, we have exercise classes. We partnered with the YMCA of Oahu and of Hilo recently, and they are offering Parkinson's disease exercise classes twice a week, which has been a huge success and very popular.
Yeah. Right, and that would feed into what you're talking about with the exercise as being a critical ingredient. Isn't Parkinson's part of a family of related diseases that includes Alzheimer's and ALS?
There are some correlation with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, but they're completely different diseases and affect different parts of the brain. There are some similarities in regards to some of the findings with the disease, but they're completely different diseases.
And at the end, are some of the progression of symptoms that come up towards the end of Parkinson's, they include, like, if you can, describe where this leads to?
So typically when you're newly diagnosed with Parkinson's, you've probably had 5 to 7 years before the diagnosis. And again, those early symptoms are the non-motor symptoms that we mentioned. Then as the disease progresses, people are still losing this neurotransmitter or neuron called dopamine. And that's when motor symptoms start appearing. And that's tremor, moving slow, loss of balance, difficulty with walking. And that continues to progress. It's usually the early motor stage when people start seeking treatment and get started on medication that's helpful, you know, with those symptoms. And most people, you know, pretty much everybody stays on medication once they start for the rest of their life.
The loss of balance one that you mentioned, can you describe what that is? Does that ever come early, or is that only comes when, so the disease is already progressing? At what age would that show up, is another way of asking it?
So loss of balance is more for progressed Parkinson's. You'll see it. Parkinson's, the area of the brain that Parkinson's affects is for automatic movement. So basically your automatic pilot is not working. And so, for example, if I'm standing on a hill, I don't think about shifting my center of my weight so I don't fall down the hill. With somebody with Parkinson's, that doesn't happen automatic anymore, and they could fall down the hill. So it's usually, again, with progressed Parkinson's, in regards to age, it depends upon where people are with their progression of Parkinson's. So for example, if you get diagnosed and you're at age 72, that might happen, you know, age 78 or, you know, 80. You know, so it's really relative to when Parkinson's disease starts. So usually those motor symptoms start coming around 10 years.
And the loss of balance wouldn't be an isolated one. It would come as a package with the other, the tremors. And
correct. It usually, those the tremors, moving slow, the stiffness is kind of the precursor. And then in addition to that, you're lucky enough, you get the loss of balance.
Yeah. So. One thing to note about Parkinson's, though, is each case is different. Like, I've got a friend over in Kauai that he's had Parkinson's for a while, but he doesn't have the tremor issues. He has some of the other issues. And so what Kevin has described is the kind of the typical progression that we see. Each case is different. Mm-hmm. I'll go back to you. That was the big thing I wanted to make.
Yeah, so when we give talks and education, one thing I always say, if you've met one person with Parkinson's, You've met one person with Parkinson's, yeah. So it does have, you know, there are some underlying things that are unique to the disease, but it does affect everybody different. Everybody responds different to the different treatments and medications. Some people can tolerate the medications, do well. Some can't tolerate them at all and have to look at other options like surgical options and things like that. So it's, so there is kind of an underlying profile that you'll see with Parkinson's, but again, it's very individualized.
Right. Like some of these symptoms that we've been talking about, I do not have, but other ones I do. And so it's when you go see your movement disorder specialist or your neurologist, he has to make a profile of you and how you're progressing and really tailor your treatment to that. And that includes the drugs that I'm on, as well as the exercises, and all the different pieces. And so it's when we start talking, everything's not cookie cutter. So it makes it even more challenging to not only diagnose, but also treat. And that's one of the big challenges in a lot of these neurological conditions that we have. So.
Right, I get what you're saying because of that individual aspect and so many different kinds of symptoms, it can be difficult to even discover it in the beginning. So you have Parkinson's?
I do. I was diagnosed just under 4 years ago. I was an early onset, one of the minority that Kevin's been talking about. And it really changes the way you're treated as an early onset, because early onsets, you have children, you have families, you're still in your prime earning years. Where a lot of the average age being onset for 62, for the majority of the people, those people are headed into retirement. And so their whole lifestyle is different. And so the way we deal with it and the way our mindset is an early onset is completely different.
Right.
And that group we're finding at the World Parkinson Congress is becoming much more vocal, even though it's a very small minority. And so I deal with it every day, even though I'm working full time. And I retired out of the Navy, was diagnosed, then I went back to work for the Navy, but I work full time. And then I do this in my sidelines.
How old were you, Jerry, when you were diagnosed?
I was 47, but we definitely saw the symptoms before that. I ignored them. What we were seeing was the slowness in the walking. My posture was suffering, and I was becoming stooped, and I was ignoring it. And then I started finally, what put it over the top was I started having tremors. And my wife was pinging me, and I just kind of ignored her. And then another friend of mine, who her husband was a Vietnam vet who had Agent Orange, so she keeps a close eye on his symptoms. And finally, they ganged up on me and forced me to go to a neurologist. I saw a general neurologist who told me I had some Parkinson-like symptoms, referred me to a specialist, went to one specialist. He says, yeah, it looks like you have Parkinson, who referred me to a second specialist, who said, you definitely have Parkinson's. And they immediately got me into a drug trial. And the drug trial was kind of interesting. They know that smoking slows the onset and progression, but they don't know why. They don't know which chemical in there.
Smoking cigarettes.
And we are not advocating going and starting smoking just to avoid Parkinson's or to avoid the progression, but it has been clinically proven that it does slow the progression of Parkinson's. So they were testing nicotine to see if that's the active ingredient. I haven't smoked in my life, but they put me on the nicotine patches, same ones that people are trying to quit smoking, but instead of working my way down, they worked me up to a target level, and I spent a year on nicotine patches. And the trial is still ongoing, so they have not put out the official results yet, so we don't know if they actually identified the active ingredient.
And were you able to see any results that you can?
In my case, I didn't see anything. It didn't help me, but part of the difficulty is Parkinson's is a decades-long disease, like Michael J. Fox has had it for like 35 years. And a one-year trial is such a short time in the overall life that. And I was so early in my progression in Parkinson's, it's really hard to determine if it really helped me or not.
And they don't, from what you're saying, and you'll correct me if I got this wrong, it sounds like they're not entirely sure it's the nicotine aspect of the smoking that is beneficial.
That's correct. They don't know. I mean, in smoking, they've got, hundreds of different chemicals involved?
Right.
So they don't know which one it really was.
It's complicated to decipher, is what you're saying. There's so much going on when you smoke. The act of smoking tobacco and the way it's manufactured and then sold, it's kind of, it also depends what you're smoking. I guess you're telling me if it's the cigarette, it comes from, it has a certain level of processing that it undergoes.
Yeah, I think in cigarette smokers, they actually see it more than they do in cigar smokers. So
the benefit.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if
the benefit. Then you have the negative side effects, though, of the
smoking, right? Which is a horrible thing. No, I get you. Yeah, I'm not advocating it either. I'm just surprised.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, yeah. So chronic smokers don't get Parkinson's, so they don't know if it would prevent Parkinson's. They just know based on that, and so that's why they're studying it. Yeah, so it's not definitive that it would prevent Parkinson's, but chronic smokers don't get Parkinson's, and I think one of the things that they're trying to sort out is that chronic smokers don't normally live past, you know, the same life expectancy, and Parkinson's, you have a greater risk for Parkinson's as you get older.
So, I get you.
So no, that might be part of it too. But definitely the other thing that's interesting on some of the studies is that chronic coffee drinkers also have a less risk of, I think some of the statistics have been 80-90% of a less risk for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And so they're looking at that and seeing if there's anything about, you know, again, whether it's caffeine or, you know, antioxidants in the coffee bean, because, you know, coffee is loaded with antioxidants. So
but I don't think we've seen the same benefit of tea. And so the caffeine would, right now, just on the surface, would appear not to be it. It may be one of the other issues, because I'm a heavy tea drinker, but I'm not a big coffee drinker. And so, so the tests have showed it in coffee, but not so much in tea. But that maybe they didn't test enough people that drink enough tea to really give it a reading anyways. So, and that's part of when they do the clinical trials, making sure you have enough representation to get a result instead of just not knowing.
Well, on that note, sort of what you were saying, Kevin, when it would come to the smoking, and that's a good point. You're saying that people who smoke are chronic smokers are seriously jeopardizing their health and may not generally live as long to become exposed to Parkinson's, because Parkinson's usually won't start affecting most people until a later point in their life. So you're saying it almost would be, to test that smoking, you'd want to find chronic smokers who are over 65 to be able to try to see if any of them, right?
I mean, right, exactly, yeah.
And ideally over 80 or 90 guys that have significantly lived past the 65 mark. And there's not a lot of those people around. There's a few, but not a lot.
Now that's a good point on the smoking. Yeah, no big rush to go out and start a cigarette habit.
Absolutely not,
Jerry. The very first symptoms. Do you remember what they were?
I didn't recognize them at the time, but it was the slowness of gait. I used to be a very fast walker, and I always leave my wife in the dust. And then next thing I know, she's always in front of me. Well, I was living in Hawaii, so I'm attributed to the lifestyle, slowing down, retirement, enjoying myself. But now that I've been diagnosed and started taking medications, my pace has returned closer to normal. So that was the first thing we saw, was the slowness of gait, a little bit of the shuffle that you associate with Parkinson's. And then I was also, you know, career military, I have pretty good posture, but I was starting to hunch over. And those were the first real symptoms that I experienced. But it wasn't until I was diagnosed after the tremors that it all came clear and I got on the medicines.
And no environmental potential causes for this. I guess it's ALS that, and I could have this wrong, forgive me, but I've had Fred Fisher from the ALS Association on a few times, and I think he was telling me it was like there is a higher risk of ALS for military vets, and they're trying to figure out what in the environment, and that's something that would cross all different branches of service, and whether serving abroad or in the United States. So it's a strange kind of phenomena, because they try to figure out what could it be. Is it a product that is vended to them, or how would there be any kind of environmental impact to people? Is there any sort of environmental impact that could lead to, or exposure to things
for Parkinson's? There's the linkages to traumatic brain injury are known, like Muhammad Ali, but the other one is pesticides. If you look at statistics nationwide, there was nodes of outbreaks in like the Midwest, in the upper Midwest, where they were doing a lot of farming and using a lot of chemicals in the farming process. There was a big study done here in Hawaii looking at people that came, men that were here in the early 1900s, and did a lot of the farming, cane farming, pineapple farming, where they used a lot of pesticides. And it was determined there is a higher incidence of Parkinson's, and they're pretty sure it's related to some of the pesticides. Which ones, they're not completely sure. And it doesn't affect everybody. So there is environmental. And that's one of the things they, you know, trying to identify what caused mine. There's also a link to heredity, too. If your parents have it, you probably have a higher incidence of it as well. But none of my family has it. We couldn't identify a traumatic brain injury, so that just left some chemicals. Now, I was raised in an agriculture industry. Mm-hmm. We had some chemicals there. Working down in ship's engine rooms for over two decades, we have chemicals there. Which one sustained exposure? We don't know.
Hard to figure out.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges we talk about in Parkinson's. The actual cause of it, even though the condition has been identified for over 200 years, is not really known. Senator Inouye had put money into the Department of Defense's budget specifically for research in that aspect, trying to find out what was causing it to prevent it in future soldiers, sailors, and airmen. That money has been kind of dwindling off every year, and we're trying to get that push back up. But identifying the cause will go a long way overall to identifying a cure. And so nationwide, all the different organizations that are working, a lot of them are working on treating the symptoms, as we talked about, but there's also a concerted effort to identify what's causing it, mm-hmm. leading to how do we treat the cause to cure it.
Local clinical trials, that's a big, you just pointed out.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We actually have two nodes that do clinical trials here in Hawaii, the VA and the Hawaii Pacific Neuroscience. Normally, in a population this small, you wouldn't have two clinical trial nodes, but because Hawaii is the center of the Asia Pacific population and really in the United States, we've gotten the two trial nodes here, and they're consistently doing trials. And when you talk of trials, you're not always talking drug trials. Some of them are exercise trials, and they're not all for people that actually have Parkinson's. Some of them you need controls, so you can compare people with Parkinson's to people without. And so there's a lot of room in these different trials for a lot of different people to participate. And one of the things that's really, I won't say good, but it's useful, is the neurological diseases, a lot of them are overlap. So a lot of what they're doing with Alzheimer's also pertains to Parkinson's, and we're seeing a lot of similarities there. And so we're getting some utility in the overlap.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier. That's what, from the ALS Association, I was learning that some of the advancements that they benefit from do come from research into other neurological conditions, and then it can be of use there. Well, let's talk about, we've kind of moved into the trials and the benefit of having money to do them, really, is what it comes down to. This stuff just doesn't materialize, takes a lot of work. Anybody who's visited the doctor knows doctors, it's a high-intensive financial industry, so it takes a lot of cash to run. You guys have, you offer a lot of resources at the website. I encourage people to go to parkinsonshawaii.org, but you can also, at that website, learn about ways to help them and to support the organization. So turning to how we can try to provide some sort of benefit, whether it's people who donate cash, obviously, to the organization, perhaps volunteer needs. We mentioned the walk that's going to be coming up, not long, November 4th, not a bad time to work out plans if you want to bring your whole company into it. Maybe it's a family thing. Maybe you want to do it to honor a loved one, a friend. Talk about the ways that people can be philanthropic and support your efforts.
We have a couple different ways, and it kind of goes across the board. I mean, people that have money and then people that are a little less and don't have money, there's still ways that they can help. First thing we have is we have a spring appeals letter campaign that we're in the midst of right now, where we send out a letter to all our supporters just asking straight up for donations. And it's been moderately successful. People are amazingly generous. Next one is on July 30th. The Hawaiian Polo Club and Homestead Senior Care are holding a benefit in honor of Hawaii Parkinson Association. You got the details on that, Kevin? You want to?
Yeah, so I don't have my glasses on, but I'll try my best here. But so it's Sunday, July 30th. It's a day at the Hawaii Polo Ground to benefit HPA. The gates open at 9 p.m.
and a.m.
A.m. No, yeah. Say 9 a.m. I'm sorry, with preliminary match. I told you I didn't have my glasses on. With preliminary match at 2 p.m. and a main match at 3 p.m. The portion of the gate proceeds will benefit Hawaii Parkinson's Association. So.
And if people are looking for tickets, it's going to be on Eventbrite, or they can go to Homestead Senior Care and contact Rachel there, and they'll be selling tickets. There's also music in the evening. It's on the North Shore, right on the beach. So you go up, gates open, you go up and you tailgate, and you go to the beach, and then you go to the polo matches and stay around for music. It's looking shaping up to be a really nice day. And then the other one that you mentioned, our big annual Hawaii Parkinson's Association walk Saturday, November 4th, Magic Island this year. We've done it at Honolulu Holly the last couple of years. But we're moving it to a very friendly place down in Magic Island. I think everybody knows that. 9 to 12. It'll have a nice walk around the park. But one of the biggest pieces that is one of our biggest draws is we have a resource tent. Mm. We have a lot of resources come in. And that is probably, bar none, the most popular place. And that the tent is always slammed on people getting more information. And that's one of our biggest pushes in HPA is the education piece. A lot of people are not diagnosed in Hawaii. We estimate there's at least 3,000 patients, and there's probably more than that that is not diagnosed. Mm. And a lot of it is because people don't understand what the symptoms are. And so we're continually trying to educate people about what is Parkinson's, what are you seeing, and so that they can, if they do have it, they can get the resources and get the treatment that they need to make their life better. Other things that people can do is volunteers. We always need volunteers, both short-term and long-term. We need volunteers for any of the events that we were just talking about, but we also, the support group and the exercise groups, we're always looking for people to step up and help run these groups. And then the trials we already kind of talked about as well. And the last kind of area is in policy and legislation. Everybody's probably aware of the health care that's coming out of Washington. If you want to get involved in that, you can call the Capitol and register your opinion. The number's 202-224-3121, and numbers count. I was back in D.C. a couple months ago for National Parkinson Policy Forum. I had the opportunity to make the rounds of our congressional delegation, and numbers do count. If 50 people count, call in, that's not a very big opinion for the congressman to take to into the arguments. If 10,000 people call, they can go in and say, hey, my whole district,
right,
10,000 people took the time out of their busy schedule to call me and says that this is good or this is bad, depending on which side you're on, but they registered an opinion. You can also do it by email. You go to the website, www.congress.gov/members. You can send them an email, register your opinion that way. And I would encourage everybody to do that and help our congressman service us, make sure we get what we need, as not just for Parkinson's, but for all health care.
Do you have a section at your website that explains some of this self-advocacy that people can do to help make it more of a priority with our legislators?
We've got a little bit of, we're going to be putting more on there, because as I've been working the advocacy side, I'm coordinating with the United Parkinson Advocacy Council, which is a nationwide advocacy council headed up by the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson Research. Their vice president for policy is the lead on that. We have national, regional, and local organizations that we band together to give Parkinson's more power in Congress. And so as we've done that, I've got a bunch of other updates that I'll be putting onto the website, everything from caregivers to healthcare to funding for research, all these different elements that we need for the long-term health of the Parkinson community.
Yeah, and to have that as something that, like, what can people do? That's a great thing, and it would be very useful to have at the site. Another thing I should point out, you just mentioned it, I just want to follow up, caregiver resources. Caregivers are a critical part of helping a lot of disabled people, and really a lot of us throughout our life, we've all benefited from caregivers at different times, and in fact, you may be one right now, and you may be required to be one again in the future, and so relating to Parkinson's, there's a wealth of caregiver resources, and certainly calling them with questions is also open to you. And as a thought that we didn't mention it yet, now I think it's really one of the real give backs that the Parkinson's Association is offering up locally is the symposium that you guys have done at their website, parkinsonshawaii.org. You can actually watch long form videos from the event that they do, where a lot of professionals come together. You talk about getting understanding, education, and learning about some of these trials and stuff. Give a little plug for the symposium.
No problem. But before I do that, you brought up a real important part, and that's the caregiver. Traditionally, we've had just regular support groups for the patients. We've recognized that we need to reach out to the caregivers. Mm-hmm. So we're in the process of standing up a caregiver support group here in Oahu, as well as one on the Big Island. That we're trying to reach out to the neighbor islands more and do more for the neighbor islands because they have Parkinson's populations that need addressing as well. The symposium that we did on April 1st this year which was my first event, Kevin's last event as president, was a great event. We had most of the movement disorder specialists from Oahu that participated in a panel, as well as a keynote by Dr. Webb Ross from the VA. He's also with Pacific Health Alliance. He's one of the clinical trial leads, and he gave a fantastic brief on Parkinson's, some of the treatments that are in progress and kind of the future. And then we opened up for questions that were submitted ahead of time, as well as at the symposium. We had a panel of all sorts of experts that related to Parkinson's. It was movement disorder specialists, physical therapists, nutritionists. I mean, we try to have all sorts of different specialists there that can answer questions. And they put out a lot of really good information, and it's all contained in the videos. You can fast forward through parts like me giving awards and stuff like that to get to the real meat of the symposium.
Well, that's a real added resource at the website for people who didn't make the symposium, that you'd put the long-form videos. I was very impressed, and I've always been impressed in previous visits with Kevin that you guys do the symposium, because it's a huge way. You talk about needing help, wanting to ask a question, caregiver, patient, whomever, have experts like that available. That's a huge resource.
Big shout out to our neurologists here in Hawaii. When I went to the National Forum, I was really surprised as I talked to people from other parts of the country that the specialists did not work well in their communities, where our neurologists are all pretty much all friends. They come together quite often. And it's the total spirit of aloha here in Hawaii that really imbues the way they work. And so I just want to give a big shout out to them, because we couldn't do what we do without their support.
There's no question about that. Before I give your contact info, any other supplies, specific skills, social media exposure from those listening, people from your board, more medical professionals to join your effort, any other needs that you guys have, I just want to make sure we've covered them. Kevin?
Just one more comment before we close is we are here for people who have Parkinson's and for caregivers. So please reach out to us. You can ask us questions, email us. We very responsive. We'll get back to you right away and help you through it. If you're newly diagnosed, that's a difficult time for most people and the families. And the Parkinson's affects families. It doesn't affect just the one person. And so there's a ton of information online. It can be so much overwhelming. So we would encourage you to reach out to us. We vet all of our information. We can lead you to credible sources nationally and locally and help you through that difficult process. And you can live well with Parkinson's. It is a tough card to get and a bad card to get, but you can fight it and you can and live well with it. And that's really our mission.
You know, the one thing I would say, being a Parkinson patient myself, when I first got it, I went and did a lot of research. But I want people that think they have it or are diagnosed with it, please work through the denial and realize you are not alone. And I can say that from being a patient. And the support group I've got around me is invaluable. And nobody should be sitting in their home by themselves. If you need help, please just reach out. Because I definitely understand. I definitely understand. And that's one of the things that motivates me to do this job. And I want to help as many people as I can. And we as an organization really, really want to help anybody. And about a third of our board are Parkinson patients. Mm-hmm. And so we have a pretty good representation. And we have a bunch of folks like Kevin who are physical therapists. Kevin's been dealing with it for, 25 years now or something like mm-hmm. that? Mm-hmm. Long time. And so we understand. We've seen it. We can help. We can help. Please don't sit there by yourself.
It's parkinsonshawaii.org to reach them online. You can reach them locally on the phone at 808-219-8874. There is a national 1-800 number with more resources to reach the organization nationally, 1-800-4-PD-INFO. You can email locally, info@parkinsonshawaii.org. At our website, you can find the full interview, the radio feature, all their contact information, and all of our previous Helping Hand guests and all of their resources at hawaiipublicradio.org. Today, we've been speaking with the president of the Hawaii Parkinson Association, Jerry Boster, and the president emeritus, Kevin Lockett. just a huge pleasure to have you guys on, and I'm really grateful that you guys would take the time to come down here and share this information, and know that the door is open for you, and that's what Helping Hand is here for. Wishing you a whole lot of luck, and if there are things that are coming up that you need our help with, I am hoping that I'll hear from you.
Oh, you'll definitely hear from us. We really appreciate HPR's support, too. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Dave.